This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I thought it was about time that we do a special focus podcast on the subject of hypertension, aka high blood pressure. We haven't devoted a single podcast to that subject in a really long time. And so we brought in an expert. She's Dr. Kathleen Padgett. She's an MD. She is also certified by the American Society of Hypertension. She is a specialist in nephrology, which is the study of the kidney, and that's where a lot of hypertension specialists get started, because the kidney is the main organ that governs our blood pressure. And it's a very, very complex science studying the kidney and how, by multiple pathways, it regulates blood pressure. It takes kind of a rocket science to figure that out, and today we have that in the person of today's guest, Dr. Kathy Padgett. Dr. Padgett is in practice in Ohio, and she is a well-trained conventional medical doctor, but also she embraces lifestyle approaches to treating her population of patients with high blood pressure. So without further ado, here's Dr. Kathy Padgett. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Padgett.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit about how you made the transition from a mainstream, kind of not just a specialist, but sort of a super specialist. You know, you went on for certification in hypertension, which is a subspecialty even within nephrology, to a practice that embraces lifestyle medicine.
Well, what became very prevalent to me, and I became very aware of after I had practiced about 5 to 7 years, was that many people were very sensitive to the side effects of antihypertensive medications, and that they wanted to do something more natural to help themselves and to sort of take control of their own health care. And I started to get the answer from patients. They would say, "Oh, doc, not another pill. Isn't there something else that we can do? I just can't take another pill. I can't afford another pill. I get too many side effects from the pills. I'm just sick of taking them." And so that started to lead me to look for other reasons or other ways to treat people, through lifestyle modification, including nutrition and sleep and supplements. And it's just gone on to kind of bud and blossom from that point.
Well, you also have a little bit of a story of personal transformation, which you share on your website at it's TC4LC.com. What does that stand for? The Center for Lifestyle Change, right?
TC4LC.
So that's kind of catchy. The TC4LC, TC4LC.com, the Center for Lifestyle Change. So what was your personal epiphany about the power of natural medicine?
Well, I was really amazed at what it could do to reduce inflammation. In 2004, I developed a pretty severe pneumonia, and at that time, when I was being evaluated, I was found to have an antibodies for an autoimmune disease for vasculitis.
Right, and this is actually one of the worst experiences a well-trained physician can have, is when you discover that you yourself are the victim of some relatively obscure medical condition that you have all too good an understanding of its potential consequences and how devastating it might be.
It comes under that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing category. And I knew that if the vasculitis progressed, the therapy was going to be placed on drugs that suppress the immune system and all the side effects that come with those drugs. Because in nephrology, the treatment of kidney disease, there are a number of kidney diseases that are autoimmune generated that we actually use those medications for. So I was all too familiar with the side effects. And I told my husband when I got out of the hospital with the pneumonia, I said, I am done. I am done with drugs. I'm not going to do any kind of drugs. I'm not going to do pharmaceuticals. There has to be a better way to do this. And I began following a much more plant-based diet to the point that now I am fully plant-based and have been for the last 11 years. And I use supplements, anti-inflammatory supplements. And through that period of time, I have managed to make the markers for the inflammation go all the way back to normal.
Wow.
But I've been very lucky that way, and I've not had any further significant problems with it.
Wow.
And I follow myself pretty carefully, and I've been evaluated by specialists, and they follow me. And if I have any type of symptom, I do go and have, you know, the scanning and things done that I'm supposed to have. But up till now, I've done really very well. So I'm very grateful.
Well, it certainly is a testimony to the power of this type of medicine to reverse even serious medical conditions. But let's turn our attention to hypertension. You know, the statistics are pretty abysmal, as you know. You can correct me if I'm imprecise here. Something like half of Americans over 50 have high blood pressure, and many are taking one or more medications to treat high blood pressure. In fact, for the over 65 population, it's more the rule than the exception that people take blood pressure medication. So why is it that Americans get high blood pressure to this extent? Is this a universal phenomenon of aging across the world? Is it just a function of the fact we're living longer?
No, it's not. Right now in the United States, it's reported that about 1 in 3 people within their lifetime will develop high blood pressure. And unfortunately, a large proportion of people are even unaware that they have it until they have what we call target or end organ damage. They have a heart attack, they have a stroke. Someone tells them they have kidney dysfunction. And it's not the true nature of what can happen to you. There's been studies in areas of the world called blue zones. And blue zones are areas where people live very long and they have very low rates of heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer. Dan Buettner is a researcher who's followed this, and he's looked at people in Okinawa, Japan, Sardinia, Costa Rica, Icaria in Greece, and he's actually even looked at the Seventh Day Adventists in Loma Linda, California. And if you take just the group from Icaria, which has gotten a great deal of study, they have a 20% lower rate of cancer, a 50% lower rate of coronary and cardiac vascular disease, almost no dementia, and 1 of 3 people gets to be 90 functionally. And a lot of this has to do, probably 70 to 80% of this has to do with them being able to keep under control what are called modifiable risk factors. When you look at an individual, there are what we call modifiable things that you can change and unmodifiable risk factors. Unmodifiable risk factors, of course, are your age, your sex, your race, your family history. Those things you can't change. But the modifiable risk factors are what do you eat? How do you exercise? What supplements do you take? How do you control your stress? And how do you control your sleep? And I think that these modifiable risk factors that affect high blood pressure are also the same modifiable risk factors that we talk about when we talk about cardiovascular disease, when we talk about diabetes, when we talk about Alzheimer's. They all tie together via systemic inflammation, and for high blood pressure, especially in cardiovascular disease, endothelial dysfunction. And I thought it was interesting that I think you, in the summer, early in the summer, maybe June, had a naturopathic doctor on who talked about inflammation on your podcast. And I was blown away that she talked about the same modifiable risk factors for inflammation as I talk about with my patients for high blood pressure.
Indeed. Yeah, that's certainly one of the main pathways by which the arteries stop functioning normally. But, you know, I'll pose a question to you, which is, are we talking about one phenomenon, just hypertension singular, or are there many hypertensions, many pathways that you get to the same result? You know, blood pressure, 160 over 110. In one person might be a completely different mechanism or not the same mechanism as in another with the same blood pressure. Is that possible?
It's very interesting. Blood pressure is usually, if you go to talk to a nephrologist, they'll usually break it down into two types for you. Essential hypertension, and essential hypertension is described by that, which is about 30% controlled by genetics and about 70%, maybe a little bit more, controlled by lifestyle. And then secondary hypertension. And secondary hypertension is described as something that is high blood pressure is secondary to something else. It's secondary to kidney dysfunction, hormonal dysfunction, adrenal gland dysfunction, vascular dysfunction at the level of the kidney, parathyroid gland dysfunction. So there's a number of secondary causes. And the teaching goes if you can eliminate some of those secondary causes, you can eliminate the high blood pressure. What's very interesting about the primary, about essential hypertension, as well as what affects secondary hypertension, is that they both lead to damage to the lining of the blood vessel called the endothelium. And when you look at the actual way the endothelium works, the final common pathway is really activation of chemicals called cytokines that induce inflammation in that blood vessel lining. So the answer to your question is there are different types of high blood pressure. The pathways to come in are different. It's like the spokes of the wheel. There are many spokes, but they all come into one hub. And that final common hub is what happens at the level of the endothelium to induce inflammatory processes and dysfunction in the way that lining of the blood vessel works.
Well, we all know that overweight is a major factor in hypertension, and I think there's some statistic that if you could get everyone who's overweight to lose just 5% of their body weight, you could probably take about half those people off blood pressure medications. Has that been, to some extent, your experience?
That's very much my experience. The teaching is about anywhere from 7 to 10% if you can get people to lose that much weight. And what really occurs is it's not so much the weight that, the subcutaneous fat, the jiggly stuff under the arm, the stuff in the buttock, the stuff that's in the thigh, not the cosmetic fat that causes the biggest problem.
That's the pear fat. You know, the people with the, who are pear shaped. They've got a waistline, but they got maybe they're not too happy about their thighs, or you know, they got jiggly underarms.
Right. Those type people don't get into as much trouble as the people who are considered apple people, the people with the very round bellies. And the reason for that is it's actually the fat that sits in and around the organ that lines the covering of the intestine called the omentum, the fat that sits in and around the liver, the kidney, the pancreas, and the heart that generates these proteins called cytokines, which are inflammatory to the blood vessel wall. And so it's that fat. We have a really rough test in my office, and I tell people, you know you need to lose weight if you walk up to the wall and your stomach hits the wall before your toes do.
Okay.
And it's the roughest of all tests. And it certainly tells you that you have way too much centripetal obesity or visceral obesity. And people will laugh, but believe me, they go home and do it.
Indeed. Yeah. No, that gets their attention. But, you know, one of the problems that bedevils me, and probably you to some extent, is what about the person who's not fat but has high blood pressure? You know, skinny person comes in and they got high blood pressure. I say, oh, my goodness, you know, you took away one of my major tools here. I can't make you lose weight because you're already at or below normal weight. So what are we going to do? Is that person doomed to require medication?
Not necessarily. You know, you can be what is known as, quote, skinny fat. So it's possible that on the outside you can look to be a normal body weight, and you can still have visceral adiposity.
I think the term is tofi, thin outside, fat inside.
Yes, yes. You also have to be very cautious. You know, fat is just one component. The other components, of course, are, you know, can you be thin and smoke, and that's an issue. Can you be thin and ingest too much alcohol, and that becomes an issue. Can you be thin and have
just that subject for a moment. You know, because we're told so often that alcohol is heart healthy, and, you know, you can have 2, 3, you know, 4 glasses of wine a day, and that's part of the heart-healthy Mediterranean diet. But when it comes to hypertension and stroke, it's a different story, isn't it, with alcohol?
Alcohol is a very different story for that. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 ounces of wine, 12 ounces of beer, 1 ounce of hard alcohol for a woman is probably acceptable. And 2 ounces of hard alcohol, 8 ounces of red wine, or 2 12-ounce beers for a male a day. When you get when you start to move over that amount, then you will see increases in blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the work has been done in men. So more than 4 drinks a day for men, or binge drinking on the weekend. I tell my patients, you can have 2 drinks a day, you just can't save them all up for the weekend. Binge drinking will lead to hypertension. The other issue for people with alcohol is, as you know, alcohol has a 2-phase metabolism. When we first put it in there, it will make you sleepy. But then it has an activating component. So if you tend to drink alcohol later at night, it can cause significant sleep disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And sleep disruption can then go on to lead to elevated risk for high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. So sleep problems and sleep deprivation can sometimes be a key to a person's hypertension. I recall very well a patient who baffled me for a while because he was thin, he was physically active, he did all the right things, he was on a quasi-vegan diet, very careful about what he ate, took all the supplements that I recommended, and he still had rip-roaring high blood pressure. Then he appeared in my office with his wife one day, and I turned to her and had a thought, and I said, does he snore? And she just rolled her eyes and she said, "Does he snore?" I mean, the walls probably practically fall down when he starts snoring. And then we did the rest of the story, we did a sleep study, and it turned out he had severe obstructive sleep apnea. And by using CPAP, we actually got his blood pressure down. Is that part of the equation for you in evaluating these challenging patients?
I'll be honest with you. People who come to my office, if you snore, you automatically get a test.
Right.
If your BMI is greater than 30, and you have any sign, if you have enough criterion to meet metabolic syndrome, you get a test.
If you have a neck circumference above us, you're 17-inch collar.
In a male.
Right.
15 inches in a woman, 17 inches in a man, and you have high blood pressure that's uncontrolled, you get a test. Now, it's gotten since October 1st of 2015 when the new ICD-10 regulations went in. It's gotten a little bit tougher to get it cleared by insurance, but now you have to have some criterion on a evaluation scale called an Epworth sleepiness scale. But most of the people, if they have a couple of those things, will also have enough criterion on an Epworth scale to qualify to have the test done.
Right, you have to play that insurance game. You have to sort of sing for your meal when you want a test these days.
Absolutely. But I would say probably 75% of people who come to see me for high blood pressure end up going to a sleep lab to have a sleep study. Now, realize, I see people who have already failed what their primary care doctor would normally do for them. So, we're already on the next tier. If your blood pressure is easily controlled, your primary care doctor, your family practice doctor, your internal medicine doctor already did that, and I don't see you. Mm-hmm. So I'm already working with a slightly different population.
Right. Well, this is a very good start to our discussion on hypertension. There's a lot more questions I want to ask you, but as our audience knows, we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. So let us adjourn for part one. And in part two, we're going to talk about diet. We're going to talk about exercise. We're going to talk about specific supplements that can help people overcome high blood pressure. Our guest is Dr. Kathy Paget. She is certified by the American Society of Hypertension. She's an expert in nephrology, study of the kidneys. And she has a practice in northeastern Ohio. Her website is tc4lc.com, which stands for the Center for Lifestyle Change. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.